The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's clinical focus is on the subject of marijuana, pro and con. And what triggered this clinical focus is the editorial, the widely disseminated editorial in the New York Times, which came out this week entitled Repeal Prohibition Again. The editorial board of the New York Times came out with an unprecedented editorial calling for the legalization of marijuana, that is, for adults over the age of 21. And this has triggered a firestorm of controversy. I'll read some select portions of that editorial. It took 13 years for the United States to come to its senses and end prohibition. 13 years in which people kept drinking, otherwise law-abiding citizens became criminals, and crime syndicates arose and flourished. It has been more than 40 years since Congress passed the current ban on marijuana, inflicting great harm on society just to prohibit a substance far less dangerous than alcohol. Okay, we're going to examine the bona fides of that claim, but we'll continue. I'm quoting from the New York Times. The federal government should repeal the ban on marijuana. They say they reached that conclusion after a great deal of discussion among the members of the Times editorial board. And this is spurred by a rapid growing movement among states to reform marijuana laws. So they're saying, let's forget about a state-by-state legalization effort. Let's legalize it federally. They say that they came to the decision that no longer should Washington hold back while the states continue experimenting with legalizing medicinal uses of marijuana, reducing penalties, or simply legalizing all use. They're saying that we need to legalize it now. Their argument, the social costs of the marijuana laws are vast. There were 658,000 arrests for marijuana possession in 2012, and this is racist, they say. I'm quoting the New York Times. It falls disproportionately on young black men, ruining their lives and creating new generations of career criminals. And they admit that there's honest debate among scientists about the health effects of marijuana. But we believe, that is the Times, that the evidence is overwhelming that addiction and dependence are relatively minor problems, especially compared with alcohol and tobacco. Admit that there are legitimate concerns about marijuana and the development of adolescent brains, and for that reason we advocate the prohibition of sales to people under 21. I'm just going to continue from that editorial. We recognize that this Congress is unlikely to take action on marijuana as it has been on other big issues, but it is long past time to repeal this version of prohibition. So the Times is coming out squarely in favor of prohibition, mostly for social reasons. They say the social cost is high, and it is stigmatizing many young adults, disproportionately minorities. It's a burden on our law enforcement system. It causes the crime syndicates to profit from it, and we should just virtually open up the floodgates on marijuana. However, restrict it to individuals over the age of 21, as is the case in most states with regard to alcohol. So, regardless of how you feel about the social toll of marijuana, and, there are those who believe that, they take the opposite viewpoint. It's kind of like the broken windows policing theory, which is that marijuana use flagrantly is often a badge or a hallmark of criminal behavior. And so it is important to at least arrest these individuals or fine these individuals or somehow prohibit these individuals from flaunting the marijuana use, because this is part of the overall disorderliness that afflicts our urban cities. And they say that marijuana is arrests are not making criminals out of our kids, that kids who are criminally inclined are the hallmark of their flaunting of the law is the use of marijuana, much as spray painting graffiti is, or jumping turnstiles, or the classic example, breaking windows. And so that's a social argument that can be argued ad infinitum. I think that you can probably muster studies and sociological treatises on one side of that argument or another. But let's look at it strictly from a medical standpoint. In this podcast, we usually divide our podcast into two parts. In part one, we're going to talk about the potential health hazards of marijuana use. And in part two, we're going to talk about some of the health benefits of marijuana and the potential for marijuana and marijuana compounds, not necessarily smoking a joint, but compounds extracted from marijuana, that there may be a future branch of medicine that is devoted to study of the beneficial effects of metabolites and specific fractions of the marijuana plant. There's some people who are real, real enthusiasts about medical marijuana, and we'll evaluate those claims in part two. But I'll refer you to this week's offering in our newsletter. We republished an article, which I wrote several months ago, entitled, "What Gets Ignored in the Pot Debate? It's Not Good for You." And that's the position that I took a few months ago, and I thought it was high time, excuse the pun, to reiterate that perspective. And in the article, I talk a little bit personally about, hey, you know, I'm a baby boomer, and I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, and I confess, like some American presidents have, that I inhaled during those halcyon days in college, but not before. And it was a time when the drug culture went mainstream on campuses across America. So I still managed to graduate with grades and my brain relatively intact. And, you know, perhaps I'm a poster boy for the principle that limited marijuana exposure for a short period of time when you're young does not cause long-term deleterious effects. You can, if you're a fan of intelligent medicine, you can be the judge. Perhaps you may find my intellectual performance lacking at times. I point out in this article that I wrote that I recently attended a 40-year reunion dinner with several of my college roommates. So a flashback 40 years ago, this reunion was a couple years ago, so let's flash back to 1972 when we were in college. And, you know, drugs were present. And what's interesting is that these folks got together, my roommates, and they are a remarkable bunch. They're prominent, successful. Many are doctors, lawyers, executives. They've had amazing careers and families, and they didn't seem any the worse for their exposure to marijuana. And you know what's really interesting is that not one of us, not a single one of us, still use marijuana. None of us have said, hey, you know, this is a kind of a cool recreational habit. Instead of coming home and making, you know, having a glass of wine or a martini at the end of a hard day, we're going to light up a joint. None of us have maintained that habit. So that, you know, may go, at least in this case, may go against the argument that marijuana is addictive and also impairs academic performance and impairs intellectual capacity and cognitive ability, because these folks are smart, capable, and successful. But I have to say that that wasn't always the case for everyone. I do recall individuals who, during college, got too heavily into marijuana, which actually became in the classic term, a gateway drug. They got the marijuana high, and that created a certain acceptance of the notion of getting high, and they got high off of other things, anything they could get their hands on, cocaine, speed, LSD, mescaline. And I have to say that some of these folks became very impaired. They had to drop out of school. In some cases, I know several, that there were drug-related cases of very gifted young people that I grew up with, went to high school and college with, who ultimately committed suicide. And whether the drug use was a hallmark of their depression or whether the drugs enhanced their disorientation and worsened their depression and sent them into a spiral of mental disease, it's unclear. It's a chicken and egg argument. This is something that can be debated on a sociological level, as the Times is inclined to do, or we can look at some of the documented medical facts, which I'm going to share with you. That's the purpose of part one of this podcast. So this is a summary of a great article that appeared earlier this year, in June of 2014, in the New England Journal of Medicine. It's entitled Adverse Health Effects of Marijuana Use. And it's based on a long series of studies. And let's look at the different areas in which it can be harmful. So let's start with the risk of addiction. What are the facts there? Well, it turns out that approximately 9% of those who experiment with marijuana will become addicted. So there are some people who say there's no such thing as marijuana addiction. And for the most part, they're right. But a small percentage of people will become clinically addicted to marijuana, just as a small percentage of people who drink alcohol, but a very significant percentage, will become alcoholic. The number goes up to about 1 in 6 among those who start using marijuana as teenagers, and to 25 to 50% among those who smoke marijuana daily. So clearly there is an addiction potential. And, you know, what they say in the Times is let's restrict it to people over 21. Well, look what's happened with alcohol. In states where alcohol use is restricted to those over 21, how many of you out there who've never used pot, you may have had alcohol as a teenager because you simply get an older teenager or an older adult to obtain the alcohol for you, or you'd source it, you'd raid your parents' liquor cabinet or whatever. And, alcohol is ubiquitous among younger people under the age of the legal age of consent for drinking. So when we talk about addiction, we also have to talk about withdrawal. Is there such a thing as withdrawal from pot? We know there's heroin withdrawal, cocaine withdrawal, withdrawal from amphetamines. There's certainly alcohol withdrawal. Is there actually a bona fide cannabis withdrawal syndrome? And the answer is yes. Symptoms include irritability, sleeping difficulties, dysphoria, which means a messed up mood and depression. Craving and anxiety are associated with the withdrawal from frequent pot use. It's a particular concern among adolescents because adolescents may be more sensitive to the potential for addiction. Their executive functions in the brain have not been fully developed. Their judgment is impaired just by the fact of being an adolescent. The brain is different. And it turns out studies show that early and regular marijuana use predicts an increased risk of marijuana addiction, which in turn predicts an increased risk of the use of other illicit drugs. And we'll talk about the gateway effect in just a moment. So as compared with persons who begin to use marijuana in adulthood, those who begin in adolescence are approximately 2 to 4 times as likely to have symptoms of cannabis dependence within 2 years after first use. So what about the effect of brain development? Think the Cheech and Chong syndrome. do pot smokers, does it change your brain? Well, as I said, the brain is actively developing until the age of approximately 21 years. Prior to that, it's more vulnerable than a mature brain to the adverse long-term effects of environmental insults, such as alcohol or drugs. And here's an interesting theory about what pot does. It can recalibrate the sensitivity of the reward system to other drugs. So one analogy for that is if you want to get a kid to appreciate, Handel and Bach and gentle classical music, it's probably not a good idea to play very high volume rap music to them through headphones, because they will get used to this very highly stimulating, unsubtle, driving beats of very high volume music. Similarly, if you hit your brain with a lot of stimulation, whatever it is, whether it's pot, whether it's alcohol, or other drugs, you change the sensitivity of the reward system to other drugs. And so in effect, it requires more to get high, and you want to smoke more pot, get more high, look for drugs that have stronger effects. So they've done experiments. Adults who smoke marijuana regularly during adolescence have impaired neural connectivity, fewer fibers in specific brain regions. So they actually have documented physical changes in the brain due to pot use. Reduced functional connectivity has been reported in the prefrontal networks. That's the cortex of the brain towards the forehead, which is responsible for executive function. Executive function means judgment, self-control, discipline. Okay? The negative effect of marijuana is particularly prominent if use starts in adolescence or young adulthood. That's a continual theme here. So at the very least, I mean, the Times got it right, but inadvertently, it's always the law of unintended consequences. Okay, you legalize pot. What are the ramifications for adolescents? Does it condone the use of pot among adolescents? Well, enough of them are smoking it illegally when it's hard to get. When it's easy to get, won't there be more of a tendency for them to say, hey, it's now an accepted thing, we'll all smoke pot? I got to say, there's been a change. I grew up in a drug era, but I was not exposed to pot until I was in college. So I was already older than some of the kids who are now starting. They're like, 12, 13, 14, 15, and they're smoking pot. I really feel sorry for them because they don't really have a time to establish normal brain patterns. And there may be greater effects because of their young age. Possible role as a gateway drug? Well, animal models show that THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the main ingredient, intoxicating ingredient in pot, can prime the brain for enhanced responses to other drugs. So what about the relation to mental illness? Well, when I was in driver education, I don't know, some of you remember a course in high school that you had called driver education. They used driver education to orient us to all manners of hazards. They had things on alcohol and the harm that alcohol could cause, scary movies. And they had scary movies on automobile crashes, terrible crashes, showing mangled bodies. And they had terrible movies about venereal disease and how unprotected sex could result in you developing terrible syphilis and gonorrhea. We didn't have AIDS then. And unwanted pregnancy. And they also had this movie called Reefer Madness that was a parody. We used to laugh at that movie. It was very not effective for us because we knew it was bunk. It showed virtually everyone in the movie who started smoking pot went completely nuts. And they turned into homicidal maniacs. Well, that was a little overdone. However, there really is something to this. Regular marijuana use is associated with certain mental illnesses, specifically an increased risk of anxiety and depression. But it's not clear whether it's the chicken or the egg. Do more anxious and depressed people turn to pot, or does pot worsen anxiety and depression? It's unclear. Marijuana is also linked with psychoses, especially schizophrenia. And what apparently happens is that, you know, kids who smoke pot who have a genetic predisposition to schizophrenia, they have a chance of turning out okay, but with the disorientation of drugs, and I think you in your extended families or among your acquaintances, you may have seen cases of this, kids who begin using too many drugs and then develop a serious mental disorder. And the drugs may have been part and parcel of the disorientation which initiated their severe mental illness. They say it's difficult to establish causality because there's a lot going on here. The same factors which predispose a person to marijuana use may also predispose them to mental illness. So it's hard to be confident that marijuana use is a cause. It may be a contributing factor. What about school performance and lifetime achievement? Well, here's a stark statistic. 6.5% of students in grade 12 reported daily or near daily marijuana use in 2013 in the United States. And they say that's an underestimate because a lot of the kids who are grade 12 are not in school by grade 12. And a higher percentage of those who are not in school smoke pot than those who are in school. So they're just saying the ones who are in school, 6.5% smoke pot. What about grade 12, 17, 18-year-olds who are out of school, a lot more use drugs? Marijuana impairs cognitive function. There's no question about it. There's evidence that regular use results in measurable and long-lasting cognitive impairments. Early marijuana use is associated with impaired school performance and an increased risk of dropping out of school. And heavy marijuana use has been linked to lower income, greater need for socioeconomic assistance, aka food stamps and welfare, unemployment, criminal behavior, and lower satisfaction with life. Now, is it causal or is it coincidental? Are people who are poor, unhappy, alienated, unemployed, idle, and depressed, do they turn to marijuana, or is marijuana a partial causative factor in their failure? That is unclear. All right, what about this one? Risk of motor vehicle accidents, and no question that pot impairs your coordination. And part of the problem is that, you know, alcohol is legal and drunk driving is highly illegal. And we've waged, I think, a pretty successful campaign against drunk driving because I noticed that a lot of kids these days, they get taxis when they go back and forth to bars. They have designated drivers. They're very careful because the penalties are so high and it's so easy to detect alcohol in your system with a breathalyzer or a blood test. You can really establish with certainty that someone has been using alcohol. That's a very, very established forensic and legal principle. But when it comes to detecting pot in your system, if you're driving kind of erratically, how are they going to tell? How are they going to tell? So according to this New England Journal of Medicine article, according to a meta-analysis, the overall risk of involvement in an accident increases by a factor of 2 when a person drives soon after using marijuana. So in comparison, the overall risk of vehicular accident increases by a factor of almost 5 for drivers with a blood alcohol level above 0.08, which is the legal limit in most countries. So they're saying alcohol probably more dangerous when it comes to driving, but pot still increases the risk of accidents and potentially accidents at work. I mean, you don't want a welder, somebody working in an automobile manufacturing facility, somebody doing precise work, a doctor or a nurse in a hospital, to be intoxicated with marijuana when they're working on you. I don't think that that's a very appealing prospect. Okay, what about the risk of cancer and other effects on health? Well, they say, some people say, that smoking marijuana really doesn't have any health risks vis-a-vis the heart and the cardiovascular system and the lungs compared to cigarettes. And that's true, is that it's well documented that cigarettes cause cancer and cause cardiovascular disease. It's less clear whether long-term marijuana smoking increases the risk of lung cancer. Evidence suggests, of course, that the risk is lower with marijuana than with tobacco. However, the possibility of a positive association between marijuana smoking and cancer cannot be ruled out. After all, you are smoking hot, burning plant material, and that clearly could be an irritant to the lungs. Marijuana smoking is associated with inflammation of the large airways. Regular marijuana smokers are more likely to report symptoms of chronic bronchitis than are non-smokers. You have only to go to a pot party and hear people coughing their lungs out, as we did during college after deeply inhaling the smoky vapors. And there is clearly an increased risk of respiratory infections and pneumonia among pot smokers. They say that the effects of marijuana on the cardiovascular system are complex and not fully understood, but there may be detrimental effects of marijuana on what's called vascular resistance and the blood flow in the heart, although more research needs to be underway. And so, clearly there's a lot of potential risks here. And, not the least of which is that we will have a population that is, less motivated, that is stoned, and, with all the toll of drug and alcohol addiction in this country, do we need to encourage another element of that? And, oh, by the way, isn't it kind of hypocritical that we're banning smoking virtually everywhere, cigarettes, but then we're liberating pot and mainstreaming it virtually without any kind of health warnings, condoned by legalization? I think that's kind of a paradoxical situation. All right. When we return in part two, we're going to talk a little bit about potentially positive effects of marijuana. Yes, there are potentials for harnessing the benefits of this natural product. It is an herbal, it is a nutraceutical, technically, derived from a natural plant. And we're going to talk about that in part two of today's Clinical Focus on Marijuana.